What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Yeah. Inside the 8 p.m. hour on the Fan in New York, looking at FedEx Field. We'll not have to look at FedEx Field in the future. They're going to get a new stadium down there in D.C., somewhere around there. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman getting ready. It's preseason for everybody. Monday Night Football. All my routed friends are here for Monday night. Bum, 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 bum. I need to get these fantasy leagues going. Well, I don't need to get them going. I don't ever want to be commissioner. I honestly opted out of a long-time league that I was in, just like over it. It's too expensive, too much nonsense going on with trades, and I feel like people gaming the system. And I think now I'm going to be in three Yankees Twitter fantasy football leagues, because as the Yankees were losing, I think I put out a tweet like, I'm ready for fantasy football, Yankees suck, anybody want to play in a league? And you know, a couple people cooked up some leagues, so looking forward to that. I'm an NFL free agent. I don't have a team. I have my fantasy teams and my parlays. That's who I'm rooting for, and I'm going to watch the whole league. That's all I got for y'all. 888-808-1019. In about 10 minutes, maybe less, we will break to bring in my guys, Ryan Garcia and Sam Lucchini. I just ran into them at House of Highlights, Bleacher Report, doing some content where it was a bunch of Yankee fans versus a Red Sox fan. I don't know if you guys are seeing this content that comes out on the internet where it is one person versus a bunch of other people. I actually today was watching some of Amanda Seales versus 20 conservatives. Only a couple clips on Twitter, and I won't get into what that was. But what we did last Friday was, you know, 10 Yankees fans versus one Red Sox fan, and it's a clash. It's Clash of the Fans. It's called Fan versus Hater. I'm looking forward to it. So these guys, when I saw them there and we had a room full of Yankees fans, I'm like, man, I've seen these guys hustle their way up. And if you guys don't know, I'm a product of Yankees Twitter. If it wasn't for the support that I got from Yankees Twitter, I don't know if I would have been on. I don't know if I would have, you know, got those commercials on the Yes Network. I don't know if I would have gotten this opportunity without people in the Yankees fan base online liking and retweeting and following and supporting me. And you know what is funny? I was listening to Tommy today open up, and for the first time I had the real thought, and I remember Spike used to tell me this, like, you know, not everybody's on Twitter. Such a small percentage of the audience knows what goes on Twitter. Like, I hear Tommy talking about, you know, his positive Tommy tweets and the reaction it got. And I think a lot of times in this modern day digital area, the lines get blurred where we think social media is real life. It is not. It is not. You should see some of the things they say to me on social media. Nobody says anything like that in real life. But what I'm saying is, you know, I'm bringing in two guys right now who are big on social media. I think when you hear them speak about the Yankees, you'll understand they're real fans. They're smart guys. But they're popping online. They haven't really broken into the mainstream media yet, but they belong. And I'm also saying, like, you know, a lot of times as radio hosts, when we're off air and we tweet, we think that we're talking to a good amount of the WFAN audience, and we're not, right? Even if you are seeing thousands of views and retweets on your page, some of those people interacting with your content are not listening to WFAN. You know, I found myself today thinking, like, how many people just want to hear about the Mets and the Yankees, and they don't know our internet personas? My internet persona at times is a lot different than who I am on air. I think I'm straightforward on the air. There's no shtick. I'm not pretending. I'm never pretending. But I definitely troll and lean into, you know, the gimmicks that work on Twitter more. Elon Musk is paying me every 2 weeks. What I realized last year during the World Series run, I had over 3 million impressions through October. And I remember posting that and flexing that and telling somebody, yeah, look, you know, I got 3 million people looking at my Twitter account. And he's like, are you monetized? He's like, I don't see a blue check mark. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, I got monetized, or I'm not monetized, but I got the blue check mark before you could buy it. Like, when I was on MLB Network in 2022, MLB Network made the call, and they got that done for me. And then once you had to pay for it, I was like, I'm not paying for this. And he's like, bro, what are you doing? Like, if you've got 3 million people just looking at your stuff, that's money. You know, the $8, $11 per month that you would pay to have a blue check mark, being a verified person, which you are in the media, like, that money will make itself back, and it absolutely has. And, you know, I think Twitter is such a great tool for us radio hosts and sports fans. And, you know, like I said, I wouldn't have gotten my opportunity if it wasn't for Yankees Twitter. So I'm excited to bring a couple guys in who have worked their way up with their content. I think when you hear Ryan speak, and hopefully Ryan's listening right now, you know, Ryan can really run up some numbers, some stats, some just real information that, you know, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. It is what it is. And, you know, Sam is a little bit more charismatic with his delivery and his approach and his wittiness. I think I already took one of his, I didn't say it, but he wrote Devin Williams on Twitter as Low Lev Dev, a new nickname for Devin Williams. Low Leverage Devin Williams, Low Lev Dev. So looking forward to having those guys on. And then, you know, shout out to Rec, who, again, on MLB Network, I worked with at MLB Network. We did some shows together. Former Met catcher. You've seen him on SNY. You hear him now on Odyssey Mets Radio. And, you know, he's plugged into what's going on with the Mets. And as I say, hey, Mets Nation, are we out of the woods yet? Is this it, right? Is this it of the team, you know, picking you up and dropping you on your neck, rock bottom? This team just making you feel terrible. I was listening to C-Mac's show over the weekend. And shout out to C-Mac. No C-Mac tonight. Gallo will be on tonight. Gallo will hold it down. I was listening to C-Mac's show, and a kid called in, and he just was complaining about the Mets and being a Mets fan. He's like, it's miserable. This is what it's like being a Mets fan. And in my head, I'm like, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. I did see our very own Evan Roberts, who was off today, put out a tweet that the Mets raised his season ticket prices. And he said it's the biggest Mets season ticket price increase he's ever had. Well, that happens when you're selling out the building. You know, when Pete Alonso breaks the record, when you have all these Beatle nights and Minecraft night and all these things like a mascot race and a dance crew and, you know, a Mets plaza where they do these pregame things. All that stuff costs to fund. And, yeah, Steve Cohen is the richest owner in the sport, but he hasn't turned a profit off the Mets yet. You also have Juan Soto at $765 million. Yesterday's price is not today's price. So looking forward to talking Mets with Rec. Looking forward to talking Yankees with Ryan and Sam. And then taking your calls in between about football. I think once this game gets going, I'm seeing Jaden Daniels. I'm seeing Deebo Samuel. I'm seeing Jamar Chase. I think they're going to at least get a series, which is good. I'm noticing this too before I take a call and then we break. I'm noticing this too about the NFL. Teams are playing their starters. You need to get reps. Football is only football when you actually are playing against another team jersey, another team live. And I think that these teams are going to be better suited for it when we get into the regular season. I cannot wait for this regular season. John is in Oxford, Connecticut. Before we go to the break, John, you're on the Fan.
Oh, Keith, thanks for taking the call. My young Cowboy fan. Are you still a Cowboy fan?
No, no. Yeah. I hung that up after they lost to the Packers. Yeah. Yeah. First round.
What did you say? Did you say to the Packers?
They lost to the Packers. They were heavy favorites. They got blown out. No.
Are you now a Packer fan? Is that what you
said? No. I'll never be a Packers fan. That's too much pain. Aaron Rodgers, okay. Dez caught it. Jared Cook down the sideline. And then Jordan Love and Aaron Jones and those guys smoking the Cowboys in Jerry World. No, I'm a free agent. My son's going to pick my team.
How are you a free agent? How you do that, dude? Explain that to me.
How do you do that? You don't wear the uniform. You don't go to the stadium. You don't represent the team anymore. You move on from it.
Well, how do you? I just don't know how you do that, because how much did you like them in the first place that you could then do that?
Yeah, it's not so much about how much did you like them. It's like, what is it worth to you? How much pain did you put in? How much suffering can you take? How much ridiculous Jerry Jones clips and comments can you actually stand before you're like, I don't got to do this. Thanks for the call, John. I'm in New York, baby. I'm coming up on 10 years since I stepped foot in AT&T Stadium. I'm a free agent. Anybody can sign me to be a fan of their NFL team, right? Wasn't long ago I told you I was a free agent in the NHL. And then I became a Devils fan. Woo! Woo! I can't wait for the Devils games. I cannot wait to go back to the Peru. But yeah, I'm a free agent. Because I'm not putting that evil on my son either, man. I'm going to let my son choose a team, team colors, maybe a mascot, a quarterback he likes, a receiver he likes. We're going to take a look. And, you know, this year it starts. This is going to be his third season. He should be able to start to understand by next season. And then by the time his fifth season comes, all right, son, who are we rocking with? Who do you want to be a fan of? I'm leaning towards the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, Hard Knocks got me. They're building a new stadium with heat lamps, and it's like windproof, and nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Bills Mafia, I want to go up there and see how they party, and you know what? You know what? Still a New York team. Still a New York team. I got no allegiance to Jerry Jones in Texas. I haven't given Jerry Jones any money. I haven't gone to that. I say, I'm out, baby. I'm out. If you don't renew your fandom yearly, you're not a fan anymore. I'm a free agent. I'm an NFL fan. You'll see me like Rob Lowe wearing the NFL shield. I am a fan of my fantasy teams and my touchdown parlays and whatever over-under spread bets I got going on Sundays. I'm a red zone fan. I root for Scott Hansen in NFL red zone. Keith McPherson on the fan. We got a break. We got to bring these guests in. 888-808-1019 if you want to join the conversation in about a half an hour. And stay tuned. We're coming right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
And we're back. Keith McPherson on the fan, another 5-hour KM to AM. Joining us right now for the first time ever on the fan, Ryan Garcia and Sam Lucchini from Fireside Yankees. What's up, guys? How you feeling?
I'm doing
great,
man.
It is incredible. Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
Yeah, since it's three of us on the call, I guess Sam, the cadence will be me, Sam, Ryan. We'll go around that way.
Works. Hey, man, we're incredible. Keith, thank you for having us on, man. This is it's an awesome opportunity for us. We know we love talking ball with you. We just saw you a couple of days ago up in New York City, but Yanks are playing great ball right now. I'm very excited to get into it, and we're pumping out great content every single day, like you know.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up listening to WFAN my whole life, essentially, so this is pretty insane. I'm really excited to get into this.
Yeah, awesome, guys. Running into you guys at the Warner Brothers building for the shoot, you know, and thinking about, you know, the first couple times I saw you guys pop up on Yankees Twitter, I'm always somebody that tries to pay it forward. I'm always somebody trying to, you know, send the rope down and pull the next guy up. And, you know, when this show popped up for me, I'm like, let me see if they'd be interested in joining us for a little fireside chat on the Yankees on the fan. So let's get into it, man. Let's start with the manager. You know, there was a lot of talk about fire Aaron Boone night. It's Booney's fault. And we got to get rid of this guy. They're not going to win anything with this guy. And then, you know, Cashman had a quote in an article over the weekend from Chris Kirschner about, he said, I'm not an advocate of becoming Randy Macho Man Savage or John Cena from WWE and providing a power drive to finish off the victim. That was him in support of, you know, how, you know, Aaron Boone handles struggles. And then there was more along the lines that let you know about, like, they're not firing Aaron Boone. And even though people like myself say that Aaron Boone's not hard enough on the players, that is an extension of the front office. That is how the Yankees want him to handle the postgame and handle the players. So your thoughts on Aaron Boone as well as Brian Cashman and the leadership of the Yankees. We'll start with you, and then we'll start with you, Sam, and then we'll go to Ryan.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of, you know, the Yankees struggles. I mean, you will say that every manager has their faults. Don't get me wrong. I think that Aaron Boone's bullpen decision-making sometimes is a bit skeptical. I think that some of his lineup decisions are a bit skeptical. But kind of as you alluded to, it kind of goes from the top down. Like, you know, you hear people talk about how these organizations run and, you know, their lineup decisions, they come down from the front office. They don't necessarily come directly from the manager's room. I will say that, you know, at some points in time, it is kind of frustrating to see, you know, how Boone is, you know, with outward criticism to the public about certain players. And that's for a number of guys that have struggled throughout the years. He's never necessarily came out and fully called out a guy or like been super aggressive to the media like you've seen with other managers in MLB, which can be frustrating. I understand to an extent that, you know, there's conversations that are happening that we do not know about. We don't know how he is in the back room. I would assume that he's a lot harder on his guys in the back room and in comparison to what he says to the media. So I think that, you know, at some points in time, yes, I think there's right and due criticism towards Aaron Boone and how he handles some of his managerial decisions. But I think it comes from the top down. As far as Brian Cashman, I am like one of the biggest Brian Cashman advocates there kind of is out there. I think he's terrific at his job. I think that, you know, the biggest proponent against him is kind of with Hal Steinbrenner and his inability to spend money sometimes. So I don't necessarily have a ton negative to say about Brian Cashman. I think that with Boone, it kind of comes from the top down. So a lot of the decisions that, you know, maybe you don't necessarily agree with, you don't necessarily like, I think there's always a story behind it, but he's a guy that's not without his faults. So to kind of sum it up.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm in agreement with Sam in the sense that number one, I think that if there was an organizational issue, which I know is a hotly contested issue, I don't think that's strictly on Aaron Boone. Again, I also don't always agree with his lineup decisions. I thought he was a little too aggressive with getting Goldschmidt in the lineup against righties and not getting Rice in the lineup against righties. I thought that was playing at a disadvantage unnecessarily. And there are sometimes some bullpen decisions that, again, I don't always agree with. But I think for the most part, it's very hard to pin it all on a manager because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, number one. And number two, they really don't have that kind of impact on a game the way that you would, the way that I think an NFL head coach or even an NBA head coach, like I don't think you can necessarily parallel, let's say, the Knicks situation with Tom Thibodeau and the Yankee situation with Aaron Boone, because if it's like Aaron Boone isn't drawing up hitting approaches, he isn't drawing up pitching approaches. Whereas for Tom Thibodeau, that is part of his responsibilities, offense, defense, scheming, those kinds of things. So I think, again, Aaron Boone, not the perfect manager. I don't know if there is a perfect manager, but, you know, I don't think he's the root of all of their evils or problems.
Well, the Yankees were able to sweep the Cardinals over the weekend, go on the road, complete the sweep. Obviously, we did see some errors running into outs, some misplays on some balls in the outfield, but you know, that's still part of the Yankees' DNA and who they are. Boone can't coach that out of them, but I did see some urgency. You know, I did see some urgency with his pinch hits, with his bullpen decisions. I even noted, you know, yesterday, like when Jazz stole the base, he stole second base and Goldschmidt hit that ball off the wall and he didn't score. He ended up being driven in after. Boone kind of checked him as he got back to the dugout, kind of gave him a look like, what were you doing? And Jazz, I couldn't see the ball. Like, I feel like Boone is now managing not just for his life, but for the rest of the season. I feel like there is the urgency we've been waiting to see. I feel like they are holding guys accountable, as you saw in the Twins series, right? Like, Dominguez wasn't getting run, but obviously with injuries and Judge not being ready to go, Stanton not being able to play out in Busch Stadium in right field, Dominguez got an opportunity to play. But even like a guy like Wells, you know, they're not just running Wells out there. It's Ben Rice behind the dish. You saw with Volpe getting a day off, hey, we have Caballero. And Caballero, they could have sat after the first day, but they said, you know what? Many times guys have two hits or get hot and we sit them down. Let's see if we can continue with the hot hand. And I think Caballero was a huge part of this weekend. So my question to you both is, you know, are the Yankees back? Do you feel like they righted the ship? You know, they swept this team. And are we out of the woods? You know, is the Boone swoon and the July you cry, August dog days over? Have they gotten right here? And do you feel better about the state of the Yankees after completing the sweep of the Cardinals?
I'm going to be completely honest with you, Keith. I think that I'm going to feel a lot more confident after this week if they can go in and do their business in Tampa against Tampa Bay, yep. and then you have the four-game set against Boston. When you yep. play Minnesota, you should beat Minnesota. When you play St. Louis with the amount of injuries that they have right now, you should beat St. Louis, like 110%. Them having a 5-1 week is awesome. And what I saw from them this week was, like you said, a lot of urgency. That team can still mash. They have one of the best offenses in baseball, like hands down statistically. It's great how much they can hit. But at the end of the day, it's always going to be about their pitching. I'm still waiting for Max Fried to step up. Like, he's looked horrendous in the second half. Like, you need that in the playoffs. You need that dog. You need that ace. So I'm waiting for him to step up and really be an impact player for this team again and not going out and giving up 7-6 like he did the other night. So I think that at this point, they control their own destiny. They have, 40, 50 games to go. They have one of the weaker schedules in the American League. So I think this weekend is going to tell you a lot about how good this team is and how deep realistically they can go in the playoffs, because they look a lot better after a 5-1 week. But I think that at the end of the day, you got to see what they can do against the playoff team. So I would watch Boston this weekend carefully and see how that series pans out.
Yeah, I'd have to second the opinion that, you know, this Boston series is really the one where I think you're going to see a feeling of, all right, we're in, or, okay, we're back to kind of where we were a week ago, depending on how that series plays out. I will say, in regards to the offense, one thing that this team has that I didn't feel like last year's team had is that they have a much deeper position player group. You look at the bench, there are useful players. You mentioned Jose Caballero. Jose Caballero is an awesome utility piece to have because he can play multiple positions, do it well. He's going to end up with 40-plus stolen bases this year. I know that Ryan McMahon isn't a superstar or anything of the sort, but, I mean, his OPS plus this year would be higher than Verdugo's last year, Rizzo's last year, and Volpe's last year. All three of those guys played every single day, and some of those guys hit, I mean, how many games did Alex Verdugo hit third for the Yankees? How many games did Rizzo hit fifth? How many games did Volpe lead off? How many games did Verdugo lead off? I mean, it's a much different group in that regard. I think, as you mentioned, Keith, with the playing time for some players, look, I have nothing against Jason Dominguez. I like Austin Wells, and I like Jason Dominguez as well, but guys are going to have to play their way into the lineup. I like the idea of, hey, if Paul Goldschmidt gets hot, he's playing over Wells, and Rice is going to catch, or if Wells gets hot, then they'll sit Goldschmidt, they'll play Rice at first. That's what I like to see. I like to see that this team is deep enough to have those kinds of open competitions in your lineup, in your offense, and it gives Boone the ability to play the hot hand. I think that's the one thing they really haven't had in the Judge era since 2017, which is just you have a plethora of position players who can play in a game, make a start, and help you out.
Again, we are on the phone with Ryan Garcia, who you just heard, and before that was Sam Lucchini. These guys are the guys that you hear on the Fireside Yankees podcast. You see their content on Yankees Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube. Sometimes I'm jumping into their YouTube live. Shout out to the YouTube live chat, as I'm in the live chat right now and someone made a fake Keith McPherson account. You know, those things happen. Someone wants to troll in the comments live on air. Anyway, sticking to the conversation at hand here. You know, you mentioned something, like, I kind of set you guys up with that question, right? I said, sweep them so I know that it's real. Yeah, I think the urgency is real with the Yankees going to Minnesota, or not being able to sweep Minnesota, but then going on the road to St. Louis and handling the Cardinals, and they should, right? These are the defending AL champs. This is a team that was in the World Series. This is a $300-plus million payroll. This is a team with all-stars. This is a team with expectations. But this week coming up is the real test, the real sign of, are the Yankees for real? Have they righted the ship here? But, you know, we're waiting to see if Aaron Judge is going to be able to play right field. I just feel like, you know, they told us August 15th through 20th, that's when it's going to happen, and it's not happening yet. We were all kind of worried about Stanton going into the outfield. He played well. He actually had his best game of the year being out in right field, but now he's sore. Ahmed Rosario is coming back, which I think tells me that the Yankees are going to throw him out into the outfield. And we're not going to see Judge or Stanton out there. But how do you guys feel about this upcoming series? Two against Tampa and then four against the Red Sox. We haven't played good in the division, and I feel like you need both Judge and Stanton's bat in the lineup.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult for me to sit here and say that I'm comfortable leaving Giancarlo Stanton out of the lineup, especially against Tampa Bay and then especially against Boston, just because of how well Stanton has hit over the course of the season so far. Granted, he's only played like 50 some odd games, like whatever, but but he has been absolutely amazing this year at the plate. So I also like kind of share this concern that with Aaron Judge's injury and him not necessarily being able to play the outfield just yet, are like, what's going on with the severity of that injury? Is it something that we don't know? Like, is it worse than we figure with the elbow? So that's a little bit concerning, but at the end of the day, I think that the two of them, if you want to be able to take these two series, mind you, that you need both of them alive because these are two of your best bats. And realistically, they can end up righting the ship this week as far as their divisional woes, because like you said, they have been horrible in the division this year. Toronto's owned them. Boston's owned them. Like, they cannot beat a divisional opponent to save their lives right now. So if you walk out of this week with a 4-2 week, with a 5-1 week, and you continue to win baseball games, you kind of change the narrative on, yeah, like, we're the big dogs in the AL East. Like, yeah, like, we're back. Like, obviously, Toronto's lead is massive right now, but if you're able to have a successful week against these two teams, then you might be able to look at this team, you know, going into next Monday and saying, well, maybe they're a lot better than they were over the past 2 months with the crazy swoon that they had. So I think that they really have a chance to prove themselves this week that they are a legitimate contender and that they can play well down the stretch. But you got to have both of those bats in the lineup. I will be upset if Aaron Judge does not play any right field again this week, because I don't want to see Stanton playing out there. Like, you just know that he cannot move like he used to.
Yeah, and to second that, I mean, you can't go into a series in Fenway and not have Giancarlo Stanton hitting. I don't want to think about a Yankee offense or a Yankee Red Sox series, or you're not going into Fenway, you're hosting them, but I don't want to think of the guy who has been, as Sam mentioned, your best hitter over the last month, not playing in a series or not playing all four games in a series that is paramount to your season. You're 1-5 against Boston. You cannot afford to even split this series. You have to take this series. You have to go 3 out of 4 at minimum. And the divisional play has been the reason why they're in third place. If they're 500 against the Red Sox and even one game under against the Blue Jays, they're in first place. Those two teams have single-handedly put the Yankees in third because of how the Yankees have played in those series. So if they can play better baseball in this series, that'll be great. But in order to do that, I think you're going to need Stanton and Judge every day. And I also will say this, Amed Rosario, really good against lefties, but I don't love the idea of him in the outfield, because if you think Jason's a bad defender, which he has been, Amed Rosario is not much better out there. It's pretty bad with him too.
Yeah, he got hurt running into the wall in right field, like just not aware, not ready for that. But Ryan, you brought up something that, like, I remember I used to say, I had a tweet that went off and I'm like, how do you guys hate on Giancarlo Stanton? All he does is go Barry Bonds against the Red Sox. Like, he's got great numbers against Boston, whether it's in Fenway or Yankee Stadium. You need him in the lineup. But let's talk about two other bats in the lineup right now. These are two guys that I've been talking about the last 2 days on The Fan because, you know, being in St. Louis, I was thinking about Nolan Arenado and how Yankee fans were pounding the table for months saying, just trade for Nolan Arenado. We need another bat. We need his bat. Take on the contract. His bat. We need another bat. Well, at the time, no one had any idea that Ben Rice would be this impactful as a bat, or Trent Grisham, a fourth outfielder who had a hamstring injury in spring training, would be your leadoff hitter, have a career-high 20-plus homers, you know, have a game like he had Saturday. Like, let's talk about Ben Rice and Grisham and how they've just been revelations this year, how great those guys have been, on top of Cody Bellinger, who you hoped and expected, and Goldie when you got him, to go along with Judge, to go along with Stanton.
Yeah, Ben Rice has been a fireside Yankees darling for a majority of years. Me, Ryan, and Alex have watched his minor league development and how good he was as a bat for several years. When he came up, he had the 300 game last year, but overall wasn't like what you fully expected him to be. Like, they still kind of had the shell of Rizzo playing first base over there, so and Rice didn't get a ton of run. I think right now, this is a bat that you need to have in your lineup every single day. Ryan and I talked about it on our show last night. Whether it's playing first base, whether it's catching, Ben Rice has to be in that lineup every single day, because when you're in this type of divisional playoff race, whatever you want to call it, you need to play your best bats 24-7. I don't care if he's going to play over Austin Wells every day, which he has been doing over the past couple of weeks. I don't care if they need to sit down Goldschmidt. Ben Rice is a bat that needs to be in your lineup every single day because he absolutely mashes. He had the 7 RBI game the other day, and all of the numbers back up that he will be an amazing MLB bat and already is sort of showing it. Trent Grisham was a throw-in in the Juan Soto deal that coming into this year and even last year, we looked at as a bench guy, not going to do too much for you. It's going to be whatever, plays good defense, whatever, right? One of the clutchest players in Major League Baseball, like you mentioned, 20-plus home runs. He has been a revelation for this outfield and has completely changed the trajectory of this team because realistically, if you don't have that bat, there's a lot of games that the Yankees lose this year just because they don't have Trent Grisham and what he's able to do in the eighth inning, in the ninth inning, in the tenth inning. And he's still playing decent defense out there in center field as well. So I think Trent Grisham has also been a guy that's massive for this team, leading off every day for this team, and just absolutely rakes. And he's just 28 years old. Like, he's going to hit free agency this year, and he will probably get a bag from somebody because of what he's able to do, been able to do in Yankee pinstripes this year. So the two of them, ultra impressive. This team is nowhere without those two guys right now.
Yeah, as you mentioned with Ben Rice and Trent Grisham, I think the skills that they bring to the table too are so valuable offensively. They are in the 90th percentile in chase rate, so they don't expand the zone. Both are above average at making contact, and obviously both have provided a ton of power, 39 combined home runs between the two, and we're not at the end of the season, and they have been kind of cycling in and out of the lineup as we've tried to figure out, okay, who's going to step up and be the guy who starts every day.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
First, you're at catcher or in left or in center, et cetera, et cetera. So when you have patient hitters who provide power and make contact in front of or behind Aaron Judge, that's a scary proposition. I know that Cody Bellinger settled into that role behind Judge as the four hitter or the three hitter, depending on where Judge is hitting. But you're surrounding Judge with contact and power. And that's really important because when you're an opposing pitcher, you can't just make bad pitches and get through that part of the lineup. You have to make really good pitches or give up a home run to guys who aren't Aaron Judge. And that's not even factoring in. Again, you have to face Aaron Judge. The wrinkle that Stan brings to the offense by being another guy in that lineup who just can absolutely pulverize you. Jazz can pulverize you. I mean, you have guy after guy after guy. The depth in this offense is such a nice, refreshing change from last year again. This is not a diss on a team that did win the AL pennant, but at the end of the day, I mean, you guys know that feeling of, okay, we are past the Soto, Judge, Stan part of the lineup. It's kind of cross your fingers and hope somebody gets something going or else you're probably not going to score.
Yeah, I hope that the Yankees look to invest in Cody Bellinger and Trent Grisham and run it back next year. There was a lot of talk about Kyle Tucker. I think, you know, that ship is starting to sail and he's going to be, you know, a top free agent. But I think there's a real chance that they explore, you know, bringing back Grish, bringing back Belly. We know those guys are great. You know, we have Jazz Chisholm who this weekend, really uses speed, stealing bases, applying pressure. And, you know, the last position player I want to ask you about before we talk pitching and I'll let you guys go is Jose Caballero, who we saw get traded in game. And, the first we saw of him, I guess Cabby 1.0, he ran past the ball in right field and it was disaster for us against the Miami Marlins. But this weekend, you know, I was tweeting about him. I've been calling him Cabby 2.0 for two reasons. One, this is his second take, his second act with the Yankees. And two, Boone loves to call these guys Cabby and Wellsy and Glaby and Judgy. And Oswaldo Cabrera was Cabby, but he's not there. Here comes Cabby 2.0, another utility player that kind of replaces Cabrera for this team. And he was great this weekend, just, you know, putting pressure on the defense, running. Let's talk about what he can be for this team, even spelling Anthony Volpe. I know there's a lot of conversation around Anthony Volpe being benched. I think he just was given the double off day and he will be starting tomorrow. But your first thoughts on Jose Caballero and the impact that he could have for the Yankees after seeing him in these three games against St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up Anthony Volpe because Ryan and I discussed this last night. Jose Caballero is realistically the first backup shortstop that Anthony Volpe's had since he's entered Major League Baseball. They've kind of like put the bubble wrap on him, like given him the position, like no days off. You're going to play every single day, but Now they have Cabbie in there who can legitimately play everywhere, and he's a player that I like to describe as you hate to watch him play against your team, but you love him on your team. He's an absolute pest. He's super athletic, can play everywhere you want him to, super speedy, leads the American League in stolen bases. This is a perfect archetype of a player that you want to have on your bench every single day. And like you mentioned, he's putting it together with the bat right now. He was excellent this weekend in St. Louis. So whatever you can get at the plate with Jose Caballero, I think is an absolute plus, plus, plus. Because when you have that kind of lineup, he's going to hit 8th, 9th. He's going to play great defense wherever he is all across the diamond. And whatever you can get from him offensively is just an added bonus. So I think that he is the perfect archetype for a bench piece that you would want, for a pinch runner in the playoffs, just to kind of fill gaps. And you can pencil him in on this roster for the next couple of years because he has multiple years of control. He has minor league options. So if they like run out of a spot on the bench, if they bring somebody in, they can send him down. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. He looks excellent right now with the Yankees. And I remember him from his Seattle days, from his Tampa Bay days, where he just was, where they just got him from. And he was an absolute pest. He was the Garrett Cole, like, finger wag guy. So, like, that's always what I remembered him from. And I remember he robbed Ben Wright of a home run in right field in Tampa earlier this year. And it was like, what? That's unbelievable. So I think this guy is, like, you love to have him on your team because of what he brings and his versatility. So I love Cabbie, and we've been calling him Cabbie too, Keith. Like, it's the same thing, bro. So we love him to death. I think that he's an awesome addition to this team and another great trade for Brian Cashman.
Yeah, I mean, Jose Caballero is this just – he is such a great utility man. He is a positive defender if you look at defensive runs saved at four different positions this year – or in his career, excuse me, second base, third base, shortstop, and right field. That's awesome. That's the kind of versatility where I know Oswaldo Cabrera is a utility guy, but you don't really want to see him in the outfield, and you probably don't want to see him at shortstop either. Caballero is a like firmly above average defender at shortstop, a good defender in right field. As Sam alluded to, that robbed home run. He's been playing a right field that is exactly the same as Yankee Stadium right field in terms of distance and all that stuff, so he should be comfortable there. He is one of just six players over the last three seasons with at least 100 stolen bases. The Yankees have not had that kind of speed in such a long time, and I feel like it's infectious. The Yankees are running so much more since the start of August. They're second in all of baseball in stolen bases, and this is while, you know, I know that they've been scoring, but their OPS this month's actually been the second worst mark for any month they've had this year, and they're still scoring almost five runs a game. I think the base running, being a good base running team, is making a pretty notable difference in their ability to put guys in situations where, all right, instead of Caballero being on first or on first with no one out, you have him on third with no one out. That gives you two chances where you don't even need a hit to score him. That's such a difference maker. And as Sam mentioned, postseason time off the bench, you're going to have someone you can bring into a big spot and have steal a base for you.
Again, we're talking to Ryan Garcia and Sam Lucchini from the Fireside Yankees podcast. Obviously, you guys are hearing them talk it up. They're great. You know, last thing for you, I saw you guys put out today, you know, who's in your circle of trust with the Yankees bullpen? You know, who can you guys trust? Earlier, I said I stole your nickname, Sam, Low Lev Dev, because, I mean, Devin Williams being the first guy out of the bullpen, this version of him that we saw over the last week, that's perfectly fine by me. I obviously also will put in David Putnam to Bednar, the closer that was promised. I think that's what we were looking for in Devin Williams. That never really materialized, but David Bednar has got this look about him. He's got a better pitch mix and just a bulldog approach. Obviously, Tim Hill is Tim Hill, and this version of Luke Weaver as a setup guy and a guy that can go more than one inning, I think those guys are in my circle of trust. Share your circle of trust. And then also talk about the pitching as far as other guys in the bullpen that, you know, have to improve and guys in the rotation that have to improve, who you feel good about, who you don't feel good about.
Yeah, so Low Lev Dev, that's like my new favorite nickname for a player ever. I mean, like, you put him in the sixth inning, he legitimately looks like prime Devin Williams. So he was really impressive this weekend, man. He looked awesome out of the bullpen when he was pitching the sixth and seventh. So that was great. If you can get that version of that player in a minimized role, you know, earlier in the game in a low leverage situation, alluding to the nickname, then that's perfectly okay. But like you mentioned with the circle of trust, my circle of trust right now is like Bednar, Weaver, Hill. Like you mentioned, Bednar's been locked down ever since Miami. He's been absolutely lights out. Weaver's that guy that can go multiple innings for you. And I was always against the fact that he should be the closer because I think that he can give you much more. I know that, you know, if you're going to put Luke Weaver in the eighth inning, he can give you the eighth and the ninth. If you put him in the seventh, he can give you seven and eight. So I like the versatility with Weaver, how long he can pitch. He's not a strictly a one-inning guy like somebody like Devin Williams is. Yeri's been awesome. I know he had a weird outing the other day, but like Yeri's been awesome as like a kind of a mop-up guy that can kind of give you multiple innings. And like, you know, if you're in a blowout, if you're up by three runs, like whatever, if you need it, I think Yeri's been great. Duvall, I love watching Camilo Duvall. He's an absolute joy to like watch as a baseball player. It's 101 cutters. They're absolutely gross. There's obviously a lot of stuff that he needs to clean up on. But I think that if you give him to Matt Blake for a couple weeks, I think come postseason time, that's a guy that could be completely gross with you. I've never necessarily been the largest fan of Mark Leiter Jr. I think that just in these very, you know, key spots, he's seemed to kind of fold over and hasn't been great. But you have two key bullpen arms that are set to come back. So you're waiting to see what kind of role Ryan Yarbrough is going to give you when he comes back to the fold eventually. And then Fernando Cruz, who was lights out at the beginning of the season, has been all out for a long time at this point. But that's another major contributor walking into the postseason with this bullpen. And then for the rotation, I love Carlos Rodon to death. He can be a bit inconsistent at some points in time, but I love him. I love what he's been able to do this year. In his third year with the Yankees, kind of picking up the pieces from what he's done over the past years. I kind of talked about Max Fried earlier and how much he's struggled over the second half. Got to clean it up. Needs to be better. Will Warren's been excellent over the past month and a half. Like, is unbelievably impressive from what he was at the beginning of the season. You know, you had the 8-run outing in Toronto. I think that guy has unbelievably impressed everybody. And then Cam Schlittler, since he's come up from AAA and has been a legitimate impact starter that can give you, you know, 5-2, 6-3 on any given night, that like will hold down the starting rotation at that point in time. So I think that right now they're in a much better position pitching wise than they were a month ago. I think that I commend Cashman for what he was able to do at the trade deadline with all these reliever arms, because I think more likely than not, they will pan out. But I do still have my questions with your rotation, especially with Max Fried, who's supposed to be your frontline lockdown game one starter in the postseason right now with Gerrit Cole out. That's concerning to me. I need to see him clean it up over the next couple of weeks. We'll see what he ends up doing this week. But yeah, I think they're in a much better spot rotation-wise and bullpen-wise than they were a month ago.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that they're in a better spot. They're definitely in a better spot than they were a few weeks ago, where like Scott Efros, Ian Hamilton, they're coming into these one or two run games where even if you're trailing by that amount, you have a chance to win. Look, I think Bednar and Weaver have established themselves as the top two guys right now in this bullpen. Hill is your lefty specialist. He's been awesome in that role. A guy like Duvall, and I also would loop Yeri in this as well. Like, I think their stuff is so good that you can see why, if you put them in a postseason setting, if all it takes is a hot month and these two guys can be locked down for you, the stuff is that good for both of them. Duvall more so than Yeri, but I like what I'm seeing from Yeri. That split changeup I think is disgusting. I know that when you get Fernando Cruz back, if he comes back healthy and his stuff looks good, he's a big weapon for you. He's still, I mean, he's one of the, I think he's the best strikeout guy on the team in terms of strikeout rate this year. And in the rotation, what I really like is that they have a lot of good upside inside their rotation. It's not these guys where they don't have great velocity or good movement. It's going to be a grind to watch them pitch because they're not going to be able to attack the zone and get outs. Luis Gil, his stuff has looked excellent since his return from the injured list. Will Warren has matured into a really nice, just like, go out there, be a number three, number four caliber starter for you. I would like him in more of a four role for now, and I think he'll can settle into that three role. And then Cam Schlittler. Look, Cam Schlittler is someone I was really high on going into the season, and the stuff gains are just unbelievable. His four-seam fastball, he's remarkable. And if you look at some of the more advanced metrics, this is a guy who has true frontline upside. The fastball is excellent. The breaking balls, the command hasn't been there, but the shape, the velocity, the characteristics of those pitches are great. I think the Yankees have enough high upside or high octane pitching in their bullpen and in their rotation to get through a postseason. The question is whether they're going to execute. Command has been my number one issue. I think they walk too many guys in situations where you just can't afford to issue a free pass. But again, that comes down to consistency, to command. Can they get that right? Time will tell.
Okay, last couple minutes here is about you guys, Sam and then Ryan. How old were you in 2009 when the Yankees last won the World Series?
I was 9 years old. It was I like still remember it incredibly vividly. I was rocking all that, all the Yankee gear. I had the Yankee shoes, the Yankee socks, Yankee shorts, Yankee shirt every day when I go to school. And I'm a Delaware guy. Like, I live 3.5 hours away. It's all Philly country around here, man. So I remember when I was a kid and they ended up winning that World Series. It was like the craziest thing ever for me, just because everybody around here was Philly. But yeah, man, I was 9 years old. It's been a long time. I'm a 25-year-old man now, dude. They got to win one now.
Yeah, I was the ripe age of 5 years old. I had just turned five about a month earlier. So my memory of that World Series isn't great. I do remember waking up to the newspaper next to me after the Yankees won the World Series to kind of be like, yo, they won it. They did it. This is it. And so, I mean, I would love to see one and not have been a literal child for that. That would be nice. So, yeah, I was five. It's been a very long time.
Shout out to Empire Sports Media for giving you guys the opportunity to make one of the best Yankee podcasts out there. You guys have absolutely crushed this opportunity. Tell everyone, you know, how you got started making content, what you guys do, and where people can find you at.
I started doing content. I was 20 years old. I was trying to figure out realistically what I wanted to do with my life. I decided to, I was a business major at the time of college, switched over to communications, ended up studying and learning all the ins and outs of video and podcasting and all that stuff. Sports has been my passion my entire life. I worked ins and out jobs at different companies, writing and video editing and all that kind of stuff. Ended up making a nice little name for myself over on TikTok and a personal account. Started here at ESM 3 years ago, and we've been able to create something incredibly special at Fireside Yankees on all platforms, and it's been an absolute joy. I could not be happier, you know, doing what I do day in and day out. It's an absolute dream for me.
Yeah, I started after my freshman year of high school. I was not great at baseball. I realized I was not going to go to play college ball. I stumbled upon a Dellin Betances signing with the Mets article on EmpireSportsMedia.com, and I was like, I want to write. I joined the website in 2019. Fast forward today, I'm still here. And yeah, I mean, baseball has been my life since I was born. I really can't remember a point in my life where I wasn't a diehard Yankee fan or playing baseball, whichever I was doing at the time. And yeah, shout out to my boss, Alex. He gave me the opportunity when I was 15, and I've never looked back.
Awesome, guys. Go ahead and plug the podcast, your individual social handles, where people can follow, subscribe, and find you at.
We are at Fireside Yankees literally everywhere. I'm at Sam Lucchini ESM on Twitter, at Sam Lucchini ESM, or at Sam Lucchini pretty much on every other platform. But we're just Fireside Yankees, man. You can find us everywhere, whatever social media platform you plug us in, you will find us guaranteed.
Yeah, I'm at Ryan Garcia ESM on Twitter, and follow Fireside, guys.
Awesome. Yes, sir. Absolutely killed it. Appreciate you guys for joining us tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us, brother. It was a blast.
Keith, thank you so much.
Of course. See you soon. 888-808-1019. Okay, we're going to get back to the phones and the calls. I don't have another guest until 10:15 when Anthony Recker will join us to talk about the Mets. This is Keith McPherson, your nighttime host on the Fan, someone who was 21 when the Yankees won the last World Series in college. I will forever regret going to class and football practice and not going to the parade. And yeah, I got my start, you know, majoring in communication, radio and television at Monmouth University, and then working in the city doing marketing and other things, and then quitting that job and saying, I just want to become somebody in sports and entertainment. And I was in the MLB fan cave in 2014, so I figured I had a little bit of a base there. That was the only sports thing on my resume. I blazed a trail, and you know, we're coming up on, I think today is about 4 years since Eddie Scazzeri said my name on Boomer and Geo as far as somebody that would be auditioning for WFAN, and then August 25th will mark 4 years since my audition night, and here we are. KM to AM returns right after this.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.